This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Welcome to Groundwire Community Radio News, brought to you by volunteers at Canada's community radio stations. This episode of Groundwire was produced on traditional Mohawk territory in Montreal at CKUT Radio. I'm Dan Capurro, and I will be your host for today. Here are the headlines. After years of waiting, Canada's first dedicated queer youth shelter is set to open in February in Toronto's Annex neighbourhood. The shelter will be run by the YMCA and is one of two queer-oriented youth shelter programs that Toronto City Council approved funding for in early 2015. Researchers have estimated that anywhere between 25 to 40% of homeless youth in Toronto identify as queer. Often subjected to hate and violence, queer youth avoid shelters for fear of being attacked because of their sexual identity. The YMCA will start filling up the 25 available beds in February and is looking to have them all occupied by mid-March. The shelter is open to youth between the ages of 16 and 24, and in addition to transitional housing, the shelter will also provide services similar to other shelters, such as life skills development. But other aspects will be geared specifically towards queer youth, like community outings that celebrate queer identities. The support and excitement for the project has been overwhelming in Toronto, and though it is a great first step, there are also still concerns, especially for trans youth. One organizer said that trans youth are the most marginalized, and specifically trans women of color who experience not only racism from within their own community, but also suffer from police harassment. This year alone, four trans women of color have died. Groundwire will keep listeners informed about this new initiative in Toronto and surely its expansion around the country. Indigenous people of the Tsauto First Nations on Treaty 8 territory in northern British Columbia have been camped out to protect their lands from the planned development of a $9 billion mega dam project known as Site C. A small group of land defenders began blockading their traditional territory in December in an attempt to prevent BC Hydro from continuing construction on the dam. On January 6th, RCMP officers arrested three people who were peacefully blocking workers from entering the construction site and charged them with mischief. The First Nation protesters are also being supported by local non-Indigenous ranchers, as well as the well-known environmental activist David Suzuki. Suzuki, who paid a visit to the camp on January 12th, was also involved in a struggle against Site C more than 30 years ago, a struggle that saw the dam project defeated at the time. An organization called Treaty 8 Stewards of the Land issued a press release this week reiterating their three-point plan to stop all construction on Site C and calling for the federal government to step in. In other Indigenous news, the Gitgat First Nation and several other coastal First Nations in northern so-called BC celebrated a significant victory over Enbridge's Northern Gateway oil pipeline at the Supreme Court on January 13th. According to the Huffington Post, at the center of the challenge was an equivalency agreement in which British Columbia gave the National Energy Board the power to review the controversial pipeline proposal. Canada's highest court found that the province of BC breached the honor of the Crown by failing to meaningfully consult with Indigenous peoples whose land stands on the path of the Northern Gateway. Enbridge's controversial pipeline project would pump toxic bitumen from the Alberta tar sands to BC's Pacific coast, where it would be transferred to mega oil tanker ships and exported to markets in East Asia. This recent Supreme Court ruling could set the Northern Gateway project back by several years. That's it for the headlines. We'll be right back after this. You just heard Bill 78 by DJ Hawk. Now it's time for our feature stories. In this next feature, Gunnarji O'Sullivan brings us voices and an update from Lilu Island. If you are a regular listener, you know we have been following this story closely. For the past 6 months, members of the Lax Kualams First Nations have set up a protest camp on Lilu Island in opposition to a proposed LNG natural gas terminal. The proposed Petronas Pacific Northwest LNG development on Lilu Island, on the estuary of Skeena River, would interfere with the delicate balance of Flora Bank and the natural processes that hold it in place. Flora Bank has been identified as critical to the health and abundance of Skeena salmon. The Lilu Island site was selected for industrial development without consultation with First Nations and Skeena communities. Gunnarji and Anushka Azadi speak with Matt Danes in Lilu Island, as well as Big Fire Woman, about Lilu Island.
We are talking to Matt Danes straight from Lilu Island. Lilu Island is a resistance camp that has been set up, you know, 7 months ago. Is that right, Matt?
We established the camp on August 25th.
And has specifically been established in defense of protection of the wild salmon estuary and the very complex and delicate ecosystem that exists on Lilu Island. Let's talk a little bit about also the importance of salmon. Many folks have drawn similarities between, the buffalo and the salmon. And can you talk to me a little bit about that? Like, is this the extinction of the buffalo? Will this be the extinction of the salmon?
Oh, it'll be it'll be catastrophic. The effects of this proposed project. It's one of our most reliable sources of food. I'm going to say about 80% rely on that food source to get them through the winter. Like some communities, where I come from, Harvey Bay, you only get there by a boat or plane, weather depending. And if the weather's bad, it's bad for like a week or so at a time. And we rely on, like, we have jarred salmon to fall back onto if you can't make it to your grocery store, right? It's crucial to protect this place, you know. Not just for the salmon, but for every living form that's on Lilu Island. The development like this will have a huge environmental impact. You know, I think it might wipe out the sockeye species from the Skeena River.
So tell me a little bit about what life is like at that camp. You've been there for quite a period of time now. What is life like out there?
I'm going to be honest with you, I love it out there. I heard it's on Lilu Island. It's the day I stepped on there, you know, I got a call from my brother Don. He called me out there, and you know, I could hear in his voice, he's like, "Man, I need you here." You know, and then I didn't realize what was at stake until I went there, you know. And then that's like, I could say that for a lot of people. If you don't know what we're out there doing and why we're protecting it, come out and see. It's worth the fight.
Big Fire Woman is on the line with me. Hello, Big Fire Woman. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing wonderful, Gunnarji. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. So you're a big, you played a really big role, Big Fire Woman, in reoccupying the land at Lilu Island in September. Can you tell us more about the journey?
I'm pretty sure that it's been a journey that everybody's tried to embark on in the Tsimshian land. Here, we're just really overwhelmed with the amount of projects that we're facing here. So the last time I went on the government website, there are 7 projects being proposed for the Prince Rupert area, which is also known as Lax Keen in Somalia, which is the Tsimshian language. So there's quite a few projects here, and you know, there's pipelines that are going to be coming in from different areas to come to the coast here, and then the LNG, the fracked gas, will be exported to Asia. And a lot of people don't really know the full impact that we're going to be looking at. I always have a hard time with this word, the cumulative impact.
Mm-hmm.
So it took a lot of different people trying different times to get something organized like what happened out at Lilu Island. So it's been quite a journey for everyone, that's for sure.
We heard Don Wesley speak at Take Back the Land. He's the current chief of Lilu Island,
yeah,
or of your territory.
Yes.
And he went there and said that Petronas offered, was it $1 billion or an enormous,
yeah,
amount of money, and then when he asked them how much they would get in cold hard cash if they were to settle, and then they changed it from $1 billion to $431 million, then he said that the people of your territory voted 100% against the project, yet they continue to drill on Flora Banks. Is that so?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's been challenging. Like, if you actually, I did my research and I was able to find the actual certificate issued by the Canadian government allowing for the investigative work to take place. And part of the conditions on that certificate states that they will no longer be able to do their surveys if they are met with First Nations people who are asserting their right to live the land.
Yeah.
So technically, all of their work right now should be stopped because of the people out on the Innu Island who are supporting Yohan, the chief of the Gitwokiat tribe, to protect the Salmon Estuary, which is Flora Banks. And it's the second biggest estuary in Canada. So our wild salmon on the northwest coast here is something that's very unique. It's in very high demand on the market. And I believe it's something that is worth protecting. You know, when I'm out there fishing, because I'm a commercial fisherman now as well, I was running a gill netter last year. When I'm pulling in my net, I want to teach my children how to do this. When my daughter's 11 years old now, but she's known how to clean fish for over 5 years. So whenever we get fishing, she sits at the table and we clean the fish together and get it ready for jarring and smoking and drying. You know, she knows how to do all of that.
Our next feature was produced by Sheila Ferrando for CKUT in Montreal and looks at Transgender Prison Solidarity Day on January 22nd.
The Trans Prisoner Day of Action is happening on January 22, 2016. The project was first imagined by Marius Mason, a trans prisoner in the state of Texas in the United States of America. Jennifer Shields, a trans prisoner activist, is familiar with some of the struggles faced by trans prisoners, even in our modern world.
Well, it's a huge problem. Aside from, like, things that should be basics and, like, just accepted off the bat, like accessing like healthcare and being treated as the gender you are. We have that from a study done in California proving that trans prisoners in the wrong facilities face 13 times more sexual violence than the general population. That's huge.
Jennifer Shields knows what the discrimination is like that is faced by trans people in our society, as well as what is faced in our prison system.
So discrimination in our society comes in a whole heap of forms. It can be as simple as just not having our genders acknowledged properly, to intentionally not having our genders acknowledged, or like to the other extreme that we have massive, massive rates of suicide and self-harm and substance abuse, and trans women of color in the States especially face massive rates of violence and murder. In terms of prisons, again, the same. We face higher rates of violence. We often can't access healthcare. Even once we do, like, the next battle for some reason is allowing ourselves to wear our hair in the correct way instead of having it shaved as the standard, which seems like such a ridiculous thing to have to fight for.
Jennifer Shields tells us what prisoner support groups do for trans prisoners.
I don't know what the issue is like in the States, but in New Zealand, there's very, very little. In New Zealand, the like political atmosphere and attitude towards prisoners is quite bleak. Most people seem to think that because they committed a crime and they're in prison, they no longer deserve the full amount of human rights that everyone does. So there isn't a lot of prisoner activism and prisoner support here, really. So we're hoping to change that.
Marius Mason is still in prison. You can get involved in the movement on Twitter and on Instagram at For Trans Prisoners and on Facebook at facebook.com/transprisoners.
And finally, on January 16th, nearly 1,000 teachers from the Quebec Teachers Union, known as the FAE, took to the streets of Montreal in an anti-austerity protest. The union's members are currently in negotiations with the provincial government to demand a massive reinvestment of cash over the next decade in order to fix deteriorating conditions in public schools. The march wound its way through the working-class neighborhood of Hochelaga-Maisonneuve, where three public schools were forced to shut down last year due to deteriorating conditions. CKUT's Stéphane Christophe was there to file a report. We'll hear first from Jérôme Charouy, a radical union organizer, followed by college teacher Philippe de Grobois.
A lot of people who are here today are really disappointed about the deal that was struck between the labor leaders and the government. And so what happens is within these deals, there is absolutely nothing that solves the basic problems, especially in education in primary and secondary schools in Quebec. And so one of the things that's not being talked about around this deal is all the cuts that were made to all the different services around education. Yeah. It doesn't solve all these problems. It doesn't solve the problem of the aging schools in Montreal. Many school boards are really strapped for funds and are cutting almost to ridiculous levels. And the deal that was struck between the government and the labor unions has absolutely nothing on, no solutions to these problems. And while they assure us that the struggle is going to continue around these issues, the fact is, right now, during the negotiations, before the deal is accepted, it's really now the time to struggle against these cuts, against these measures. And by accepting these deals, the labor unions are basically selling out their members, and they're destroying all the mobilization that was done up until this point.
Just for people who aren't following the details, can you highlight one or two points of critique towards this deal that has been signed by some unions and the Quebec government?
Yeah, okay. So basically you have the central table deal, which is about the wages, the pensions, parental leaves, etc. And then you have things that the tables that are more specific to teachers or people in health. So the deal is mostly about the central table. So the wages. Basically, you have some raises in wages, but it's not clear if it's going to be sufficient to counter inflation. So a lot of people will probably get poorer out of this. According to different...
People meaning teachers.
Yes, teachers.
Avec nous marcher. Viens, on fait une marche. Et viens, on marchera. Viens, on fait une marche. Et viens, on marchera. Viens. On fera la marche de sel, la marche pour le français à McGill, la marche pour nos droits civiques, ça marche. On marchera pas si vite, on ira à notre rythme, on rip des battements de cœur, des peuples qu'on opprime, on chantera des hymnes. Puis les tourments qui nous habitent, on gravira le granit, puis le jardin botanique, on gravera le temps puis son histoire. On marchera contre marées et vents, contre les armes des méchants, ce ne sont plus les plus grands quand on se rassemble, c'est nous les géants. On changera d'air, on marchera solidaire, pour la paix puis pour la terre. L'homme et la rue font la part, prend une part de chaussures. On chaussera le rêve sur la chaussée des voitures, on pavera le chemin, on se repisse comme Gandhi. Viens si t'en as envie, passe d'envie, faut se faire entendre comme dans un ampli. Emmène ton sac à dos, ton sac de acquis. Mon ami, tu sais comme moi que rien d'ici n'est acquis. Viens, on fera une marche. Et viens, on marchera. Viens, on fera une marche. Et viens, on marchera.
Joins-toi à la marche. Gros, c'est le temps d'agir. C'est le temps de t'embarquer ou peut-être t'en aller dans le temps de dire. Révolution avec le grand sourire. Dans un monde sans arrêt, comme Jean Lemay semble-t-il. C'est pas le temps de sangloter, d'être décorté les jambes. Écoute pas les ragots qui inventent pour retourner les gens. La crise persiste, on a dessiné l'esquisse. Viens faire de l'exercice pour montrer qu'on existe. Désobéissance civile, ça commence ici. Développe ton sens critique face à la loi 78. Antidémocratique, mais check bien ma science physique. Les preuves sont restées mains, nous autres on lance les rites. Les cancers, les cancers sinistres pour le concerto. Quand ça dans nos cerveaux, on a start le camp d'arbon. C'était écrit dans les constellations. Tous ceux qui sont concernés viennent s'asseoir à table de consternation.
Viens, on fera une marche. Et viens, on marchera. Et viens, on marchera.
The NCRA's annual Homelessness Marathon is scheduled for February 23rd of this year. 101.7 CVIL-FM from Abbotsford will be hosting the 12 to 14 hours of continuous programming. Aaron Levy is station manager over at CVIL.
There have been some 24-hour years, but lately it's been 12 to 14 hours of content where anywhere from, I think, like 25 to 40 stations have broadcast straight through that time slot, 12 or 14 hours, to broadcast content from across the country, from people covering homelessness, living with homelessness, working in the home in the service sector to provide resources for people struggling with not only homelessness but issues of tenant rights and human rights as they relate to housing and infrastructure and what's available for people who are struggling.
Last year, Groundwire produced a special Homelessness Marathon episode, with contributions coming in from Nunavut to Vancouver. CJAM 99.1 from Windsor, Ontario, sent us a piece on Windsor's only women's shelter, and here is a clip from that now.
From CJAM 99.9 FM brings us our next report from a women's shelter in Windsor, Ontario.
You have reached the Welcome Center Shelter for Women. If you are in crisis and require emergency shelter services, please press zero now.
I've given up hope. I was suicidal. It's hard when you don't have anything. A fork, a pillow, nothing. You're starting off with nothing. I had no hope. Ruth Coyle, I was a previous resident here. I had a previous relationship for 16 years and broke up, and he owned the house, you know, and we had a child together, so I had nowhere to go, and he brought me here to get started, you know, to get help.
How hard is it to survive from week to week?
It's very hard. Being on Ontario Works and trying to find a job there, I've applied in so many places right now and no phone calls, no job interviews. And it's hard. It's really rough. It's hard to survive.
Groundwire is once again compiling a special Homelessness Marathon episode, and we're currently seeking stories for the 30-minute program. If you or a station near you are working on a suitable piece, get in touch with one of Groundwire's national coordinators.
really the biggest and most important thing about the Homelessness Marathon is that we get to hear a diversity of voices talking about a diversity of issues about homelessness that all challenge the stigma of homeless people being lazy or drug addicted or, you know, it being their own faults or that it being not the rest of the community's responsibility, concern, or interest to provide support for people who are not as in as good a position as those of us who do have stable housing and stable income and things like this.
That's it for this edition of Groundwire, produced by CKUT Radio in Montreal. Music this week was by DJ Hawk. Headlines this week were written by Aaron Lakoff and Omisama Ramatula. We also thank Gennady O'Sullivan, Stefan Christoph, Sheila Ferrando, and Audrey O'Brien. Tune in again to hear Groundwire on your local community radio station or download at groundwire.ncra.ca. Groundwire is a project of the members of the National Campus and Community Radio Association.